Episode 91 of the Busting Balls podcast. They're John and Chris. I'm Jeffrey. You can hit us up on Twitter at Busting Balls Pod. Email us bustingballspod@gmail.com. If you're listening to this through our native SoundCloud feed, soundcloud.com/busting-balls, or the PWOM podcast network, soundcloud.com/pro-wrestling-only. And you can find us on Spotify. Search Busting Balls Podcast. Today's topic, what makes a great striker? John, Chris, and Jeffrey dissect the most prominent position on the pitch. John, Chris, what's happening, brothers?
Well, we've had the first domestic silverware in England, haven't we?
Yes, we have, John. Yeah, how is it you needed 2 hours to break down a bad Chelsea team, John?
Because we were playing our academy kids, some of whom had one appearance between them and two. You know, I know Chelsea had a younger side out than we are generally. They have a lot more experience in their general play. Well, we had, you take Virgil and Endo out of our side, we had a youth team out there. We were going to the under fives if those kids hadn't been able to make it.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you were kind of playing with fire there, my guy.
Yeah, and also because the referee did not know what the fuck a valid goal is, you know. Disallowing a goal for the weakest possible reason. He's in play. He might block off someone, maybe, and he's still offside. So we're going to disallow it. And then, you know, United's winner with exactly the same referee that this, you know, later in the week allowed. But Van Dijk, what can we say?
Yeah, you know, I know Liverpool never gets the rub of the green, like, you know, getting to score in the last second, in the 100th minute of a 98 of a 8 minutes added time, right? That never happens.
Hey, you know, it never happens because, you know, Forrest got booked twice in injury time for time wasting. Plus, they kick at one of our players in the head and he goes down. Here's a bit more injury time.
Man, just fabulous, just amazing how this keeps happening. How you keep scraping wins out of the on the last second, right as the time's elapsing. Amazing.
Jeff, have you had a look at the league table today?
Yes, I have. You do notice that Arsenal are down a game, right?
I know Arsenal down a game, and we'd still be ahead of you.
Well, okay, you know it's cool. It's whatever. You know, it is what it is. I mean, we have, a Liverpool versus City bloodbath to come next week. And, who could be the biggest beneficiary of this? I wonder. And besides, North London is still red regardless because of a 1-0 victory by the women over Tottenham Hotspur women today.
I saw the first half hour and they were dominant, Arsenal. Absolutely dominant. Spurs were nowhere near them.
Did you all see that the the record for attendance in a women's match happened at the Emirates?
Yes. 60,000 plus.
Yes.
Nice.
Amazing.
Is it the second, I think, biggest attendance of the weekend in the UK?
Yeah, I think so. You know what? I don't care. From now on, all the women's games need to be played at the main stadiums of every club. None of this training ground shit anymore.
I'm happy with it. I'm good with it.
Chris, we barely heard from you. Any thoughts on...
No, all's good. I've just been absorbing things accordingly in this situation. It's been an interesting trend we've had this past weekend, specifically in terms of late minute goals either being allowed or not allowed, depending on where exactly in the globe you are. So
yeah,
things to get into for sure. Awesome to hear in terms of the Arsenal Tottenham game drawing as many people as they have and seeing the women's game continue to make strides in that regard, and ideally moving some of these games, if not all of them, at this point to main stadiums, just to give it a shot in the arm, see how it all goes.
Yeah, I mean, I don't see any reason why not to do it, to be honest. Because it all, I mean, it's
then you should.
Yeah, I mean, look, I mean, if they can draw this many to the Emirates now, the women's team can draw this many to the Emirates. There's no excuse, you know?
Yeah, the only reason I can see for it not being done is because they've been spreading the games to other grounds, haven't they? So if other clubs are able to, you know, spread a little bit of wealth, particularly given the Premier League makes so much money, there's maybe a case there. But I am all for as many people going to see women's football as possible because it is a high-class product.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. I mean, yeah, there's nothing wrong with the Women's Super League at all.
Yeah, and speaking of just the high class that it is, our Brazilian women are doing the things that our men haven't been able to do in eons, and that's just beat the everlasting piss out of Argentina in the Gold Cup yesterday. 5-1 win.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I'm sure you all saw that the U.S. women had a little bit of an issue in the last day of the group stage. They lost to Mexico.
Tiny issue, yeah.
Ooh.
A 2-0 thorough embarrassment to Mexico there. Just
yeah.
I mean, they've got Colombia next here coming up tonight, so
that is tonight.
They need to get the job done here.
Yeah. I mean, that is tonight as we record this. You know, again, I think we all know by now that this is not... The era of dominance is over for now. I think we've all accepted this.
You know what? I am really sad that we are having to retire one of the show's memes here.
It is true. Yeah, we are going to have to retire that. But you know what? It had a good run. Had a good, what, 5-year run, didn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, had a good...
Raise it up to the rafters, boys.
Yeah. Yeah, that last Women's World Cup kind of belied it quite a lot, but, you know... You know, it's just, again, you know, we as intelligent fans of this sport know that everything is cyclical and, you know, sometimes things go in a down cycle.
I'm here to bring it back up. So,
yeah.
I've been basically living through that with my national team since 2002. And to be honest, I'm just glad they had a run that I was alive for long enough to at least appreciate it to a certain extent.
Because right.
I don't know if it's ever going to happen again during my lifetime.
I mean, you never know. You never know.
You don't.
Know.
But at the same time, that's why you appreciate it when you have it. And, you know, you try to keep some perspective. In this case, because sometimes it never happens for certain teams in certain people's lifetimes. I mean, England's been waiting for God knows how long at this point, even though they delude themselves.
Since 1966, yes. Since 1966, yeah. So we're coming up on 60 years nearly.
God, I wish it could be that delusional for 60 plus years.
Talking this, boys, moving it on.
Wait. You know, since we are talking about, you know, the cyclical nature of sports and how how things, you know, will come to a down cycle, I just want to cap off the beginning topic by saying congratulations to John and Liverpool for winning the Carabao Cup, because oh yeah, your down cycle is about to come, brothers.
Well, if it comes, it comes. I've had those 8 years in the club. That's what you want, baby. That's what football's all about. I'm good with it. I'll have enough to feed me for years.
Now, I am having a bit of a down cycle myself in its own way, because especially this weekend, because Celtic had a gilded chance to pull back ahead of the Huns, because Rangers, who went ahead last week, they went ahead on the table, lost to Motherwell 2-1 at Ibrox. And then what happens? Something go to Tynecastle and completely fuck it.
Jambles, well, baby, let's get it.
Oh, ooh. Shut up. Shut up, Brandon, you.
Look, if there's one thing this particular loss proves, Brandon Rodgers is probably the most overrated manager in the market right now.
Okay, well, you're not going to get me to disagree with you about Brandon Rodgers, because I think that motherfucker should never have been hired again. But also, you know, I did see a lot of chatter about VAR and why Yang got sent off and this and that.
There was some fuckery with the refereeing throughout that entire game. There's no question about it.
Well, but you know, yeah, I mean, again, you know, once again, you know, the Huns, you know, need help from the SFA to get there. But at the same time, VAR did not make Ida miss a penalty either.
Yep, exactly. I mean, Xander Clark somehow got his foot on that one when it shouldn't have been anywhere near close if that penalty was better taken. So
yeah, but you know what?
Factors to consider.
I mean, if this was still Ange Postecoglou's team, they would have washed the Jambos 5-0.
It would have been probably like a 5-1, 5-2 situation there at most. Just again, there is a clear night and day difference between Ange led Celtic and Brendan Rodgers led Celtic. And again, just don't, for those Celtic fans that still, I don't think most people hold a lot of faith in Brendan Rodgers at this point, just know that this ride is going to end sooner rather than later at the rate that it's going.
Yeah, I mean,
especially if Rangers win the league this season.
Yeah, I mean, I have to admit, Clement has been a great manager for Rangers. They are an entirely different team than they were under Michael Beale, which just brings me to my next point, which is it has been revealed somehow that Michael Beale, who just got sacked at Sunderland, after 63 or 64 days at Sunderland, which John, what does that make him on the cloth scale? That
was it 18-19 days more than Clough? He had 3 more weeks than Clough.
Yeah, on the cloth scale that we have to rate things by. Yeah, Chris, I know you know the Muda scale for how long. How bloody a pro wrestling match gets. We have the cloth scale
for how long a manager lasts.
How long a manager lasts, yes. After Brian Clough's infamous 46 days at Leeds United.
But it's the whole situation with you. It's not just the fact that it ended. It's how it ended. And it's like finding a men's burner account on Twitter.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. As someone in a high pressure environment on that job and things of that nature, to an extent, I understand the idea of a burner account, but don't tie that burner to a business that you ran 7 or 8 years ago that's been defunct. Anybody with enough time on the internet will find that shit out within an hour.
Oh,
be a little more goddamn discreet about it if that's how you're gonna do it.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, no wonder Celtic rolled the Huns last season with this clown in charge.
Don't get me wrong, after seeing a season of Sunderland till I die and seeing how that fan base is, you know what? Fuck them. I'd be blasting them at every given chance I could too.
these do not seem like
good people.
Wow. Chris going all in after the Macums today.
I was gonna say Chris is planning never to go to the north of England with our stance on Newcastle as well.
No, I mean I'm not in terms of it like
yeah, the whole Tyne Wear area. Yeah, the whole Tyne Wear area. Chris is a no-go zone.
Passing by that and heading straight up to Scotland. They seem more fun.
Anyway, yeah, screw Brendan Rodgers and screw the Lowells too. They need to go too at Celtic. I can't believe that they brought them back on the board after 2 years of Ange, and then they bring them back, and here we are, we're back with Brendan Rodgers.
Hey, you know what comes next?
Jose Mourinho.
The third coming of Neil Lennon, my friend.
Oh, fuck off.
Why would you
put this evil on me? Why?
Because we're talking about time cycles, baby.
We already had the down cycle. I don't need to be dead and buried cycle.
Let's talk about an up cycle. Let's talk about Leverkusen here. It was weird.
Oh my goodness gracious.
10 points clear with 10 games left. Oh my lord.
Woo! I mean, well, the
pharmaceutical company might actually be able to do it after all.
Celtic just botched an 8-point lead, you know, in the league that they basically own. So, you know.
Well, but they played Bayern Munich twice, so Bayern cannot pull back those points that way.
No. And in fact, they played Bayern twice and got washed at least one of those times.
Yeah, they are unbeaten. Don't get Leverkusen still at this point in the season.
Yeah, sadly, St. Pauli's run ended. Sadly. To Schalke. Frickin' Schalke.
Schalke's fighting for their literal lives, so I kind of understand the urgency there as a whole in terms of like their, not only obviously like in cup situations, but again, in the league side of the spectrum, they've been fighting relegation for a while now. They seem to be getting a little clearer off of it, but it's the aspect of if they get relegated, that club is done as we know it because of the depth that they have and what they.
Well, in fairness to Schalke, they are 5 points clear of the drop right now, yeah. But they are in 14th on 29 points. Only Kaiserslautern, only 1 point ahead of Eintracht Braunschweig. So they are. So I mean, they do have a little bit of a gap. 5 points, also the gap between St. Pauli and Holstein Kiel. Holstein Kiel lost. It looks like Hamburg lost this weekend too.
Yeah, I believe so. I'm looking at the results here.
So, but yeah. So I mean, the top of the table is basically unchanged in the Zweite Bundesliga. But back to the Erste Bundesliga. Yeah, Leverkusen are finally going to break that duck. People are going to look at Bayern Munich. They're going to say Harry Kane is the reason. You know what? I'm actually going to, far be it for me to do this after the years and years we slagged him off as Lord Brexit, but Harry Kane has actually been pulling his weight at Bayern Munich.
He's kind of the only one on that team that has, which is weird.
You can take the Spurs out the guy, but...
But all the same.
Yeah, I'm just going to say this. It's the fact that Harry Kane, in his contract in Football Manager manners, had the whole bringing a player to help him acclimate to the environment. I just don't think they should have gone for Eric Dyer if that's the case. Because, well,
yeah.
Woo!
Well, man, Bayern brought this on themselves with some of the business that they've been doing. And again, letting go of Julian Nagelsmann long-term is already showing to have been a huge mistake.
Yeah, they never should have fired Julian Nagelsmann, and especially not replace him with Thomas Tuchel.
Oh, absolutely not.
Yeah, and I think since we last spoke, Thomas Tuchel is out at the end of the season.
Oh, yes. Yes, he is.
It's been made official.
Yeah.
If not before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, we are in Germany, though, because we already know the situation with Bayern is a mess, and it's going to be an even funnier mess by the course of the offseason if they manage to lose out on everything for the first time in a decade plus. But the cup with the DFB Pokal, let's not forget, Saarbrücken is still in. They've got Borussia Mönchengladbach, I think, coming up on Tuesday there, but that's a... Drittliga team that's still in the competition, and let's not forget.
Yeah, Saarbrücken.
Bayern earlier in the tournament.
Oh, yes, so, didn't they take down Dortmund too?
Let me double check here. No, it was Stuttgart that took out Dortmund.
Was it? Okay. Yeah. So I need to look that. Yeah, hang on. I need to look this up now.
Good season for Stuttgart. Good season for Stuttgart so far, though. They're holding on steady in third, so that's a.
Stuttgart have been amazing this season. Like it's bananas.
Yeah, a bit of a surprise movie. Like, we were kind of expecting, for example, like Union Berlin to perform a little bit more with their form last season, but they've been fighting to not go into the relegation zone there. Thankfully, like, Home, Mainz, and Darmstadt have been abysmal throughout the year, to the point in which I think those spots of the relegation teams are, like, safe for a couple of them.
Köln have been trash, too. So, actually, that Saarbrücken Gladbach match is actually next week on the 12th. Yes. Because their next opponent is actually on Saturday against Erzgebirge Aue in the Dritte Bundesliga. But yes, I'm looking at the Pokal. Okay, yeah, they took out Eintracht Frankfurt 2-0 in the Pokal, beat Bayern Munich 2-1 prior to that. And Karlsruhe, that's in the Zweite Bundesliga. So yeah, I mean,
magic does exist.
But overall, do you know where Saarbrücken sits in the Zweite Bundesliga? They are 10th. They are 10th on 40 points, tied. They have a +4 goal difference on FC Ingolstadt. Directly above them, directly below them, John and Chris, two teams of the elder vintage of German football, names we have not said in quite some time, probably have not passed through either of your lips in quite some time, 1860 Munich,
oh, Lord,
and Victoria Köln, 1904.
Those are names that you just don't see unless you're playing at this point, unless you're following those teams directly, or if you're playing an FM save in the lower leagues of those particular countries and then running into them twice.
Or if you're just a German football nerd, like, you know, like some of us, yes.
There is that as well, yes, but...
You know, there was a store of the Hofbräuhaus that unfortunately closed during the pandemic, here in suburban Chicago, and they actually did have on the walls, yes, they had the requisite Bayern jerseys, but there was at least one 1860 Munich jersey on the wall too.
Nice.
It was very plain. It was a plain white, and it just had the badge, you know. But you know, what can you do?
I mean, it's been kind of a crazy month as a whole in terms of footballing. Obviously, the competitions we mentioned, the big results over the last couple of weeks. Let's jump over to Spain real quick, because, again, that Real Madrid game yesterday and the way that it finished...
That was hilarious.
It was. the funniest aspect of it for me personally, though, it's for anyone that actually followed that entire match, if they'd seen the first half, that ended up happening to Valencia too, where that ref just blew the whistle like mid offensive play and just decided, nope, we're ending this right here. Go to the locker room.
I mean, that is Spain for you though. So
it's just incredible Spain fucker. But again, that red card for Bellingham at the very tail end of it, because Real Madrid decided to just, like, I could have sworn that somebody would have fought that ref if they could.
Well, okay, so yeah, there was a lot of chatter on social media about that, and you know, and why Bellingham was the only one getting red card. Okay, first of all, someone else did get booked in that fracas, and second of all, Bellingham's card came after the final whistle had blown, and Bellingham was basically, you know, stalking the ref basically at that point. So yeah, if you look at the context of that, I don't see a problem with Bellingham getting red for that.
I understand the players being upset, but you have to control your reaction, because you know what refs can do with dissent now, because it's been a point of.
But also, how many points ahead of Girona are Real now? Like 8? Or they were ahead?
I believe 7 or 8. Let me just check.
So they have a multiple point gap on them, a multiple game gap
seven,
on them.
Seven points, because Girona did lose to Mallorca earlier today. So Real Madrid's a 66, Girona's a 59.
So they've fallen away.
It did kind of come across as entitlement, really. And it's not good enough.
I mean, I get it. It was his goal that got disallowed.
Yeah,
okay. Maybe wrongly, maybe not. Who knows? But I didn't actually see the game. I was caveat. I did not actually see the game. So
I did see the play. The thing about it is that by the time that the ref blew the whistle, whether some people heard it or not, within 2 seconds that cross came across.
Yeah,
there was literally like the Real Madrid player did have the ball and crossed it within like 2 seconds later onto Bellingham's head. So I get the point of contention to it, but it's a situation in which with Real players losing their heads the way that they did, that's just giving nonsense referees more ammo to do this sort of shit to people.
And I mean, had the whistle gone.
Yes.
Then the play's dead. Then the play's dead, period.
Yeah, you've gone for the cross when it's not like Zico in the 1978 World Cup with Clyde
Tom. It was the closest thing to it, but not by that much. There's like... Yeah. I can see a case being made for it, but at the same time, it's that situation with it. At this point, it happened. That is the decision. If you want to complain about it, do it in the aftermath of the game. File your former complaints and everything in between. Don't just have your guys lose their cool in the middle of the field and cost you possibly a game or two now.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, you know, in basketball, you know, how you have, you know, the light on the backboard now. You know, when time elapses. So, you know, that way you can see if the ball actually was in the air before, you know, before time went out. If the ball's in the air, it's a good play. If it hadn't left his hands and that backboard is lit red, then that's that. I mean, yeah, if the whistle had blown, the whistle blew. And, you know... Yeah, I mean, it sucks, and sorry about you, but that's how it is. So.
Oh, yeah. Since we're going to talk about, since we are in the subject of Spain, boys, there's being broke in football. Then there's being Bed Bath and Beyond broke, or as I like to call it, FC Barcelona.
Hang on.
Have you heard about the situation with their kits?
Oh, no.
So, they're ditching Nike and apparently doing all of their apparel in-house moving forward.
What?
As of the upcoming season.
Have you not heard this?
No! I am stunned. They are going to in-house their... Who's going to actually fucking manufacture this?
I'll read you the exact story, which came from Sport over in Spain. Barcelona are about to make a historic decision. The club is set to terminate its contract with Nike and create Barca's own brand to manufacture the jerseys. This will mean that the club will sponsor itself and keep 100% of the profits. Now, here's the problem with this. And there are many problems. Don't even get me wrong. The main issue is something that's called, you know, supply chain and distribution.
Yeah.
Barcelona can barely run a bath at this moment. And yet, they want to sit here and take on the worldwide manufacture and distribution of one of the best-selling football shirts in the entire world, when Nike already has all those processes in place already. This is going to go terribly, and I cannot fucking wait to see it happen.
But also, don't they get money from Nike? Like that is an income stream that they're cutting off.
Yes, Jeff, but remember, they're so broke that they're having this galaxy brain idea that, hey, if we keep 100% of the profits, maybe we'll recoup some of the costs. Blah 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 blah.
But the costs are up front!
I am aware of this, but remember, this is the same team that keeps pulling every lever in the book so that they can keep their rampant spending for players and to keep this reputation that they are one of the world elites when they're just incredibly broke. And long term, this club is, they're just fucked.
They're hosed.
Let's just call it what it is.
John!
Connected anymore. Are they just pulling on the randomly to see what if anything happens? Does one of these levers connect to a bucket of shit that's just going to pour out all over them here?
It's just the Conan O'Brien bit with pulling the lever on his old late night series every single time and having the dumb looking expression on their face every time that they do it, expecting something good to happen.
Is this like, you know, they just say, I don't know, and it's like, you can't do that on television. Somebody says, I don't know, and then the green slime hits, you know?
Feels like it at this point.
I'm reaching way back for a reference here, but, you know, you know, I know that Nickelodeon has basically made the green slime into its own thing without you can't do that on television. With no acknowledgement of you can't. God damn it. Christine and Kevin Kubicheski deserve better, damn it. Yeah, as these two are like, what the fuck is he talking about? Well, I reference an old Canadian TV show that used to be on Nickelodeon when I was a kid.
You can remember that?
The 90s are still wonderful. Black and white, so. It's one of those circumstances, again, where this club is just heading towards the precipice. It's just they're delaying the inevitable at this point. But at some point or another, their number's going to come up on that.
There's, you know,
a lever to pull. And the ramifications are going to be historical, to say the least.
Yeah, far be it for me to quote the Grateful Dead, but, you know, it may be going to hell in a bucket, but at least we're enjoying the ride, you know.
It's going to be Rangers all over again, isn't it?
It has that feeling.
Except it's not happening to Rangers is the problem.
Fair. I understand.
But, you know, again, you know, every time I hear about this, I just keep thinking back to that 2001-2002 season where Barca were just like in the shit, and then they got a lucky loan move of Edgar Davids and...
Oh, and the greatest ever hat trick, probably, on the last day of the season.
Yeah, and I mean, yeah, they still finished, what, second? They still finished second that year. They didn't win the league, but, you know.
No, they got into Europe, and, picked up Convino, and...
Yeah, and then away we went. Yeah, and then away we went.
Yeah, sometimes, boy, they have to accept we're going to have to suck it up for a season, but no one wants to do that.
Well, nobody ever, I mean, who does want to suck it up for a season? Who wants to have a rebuilding year? Who wants to admit that, yeah, we're not at that level? I mean, Chelsea have been living under this delusion for the last two seasons.
Man United have been trying it for a decade.
Now, but they keep, right, but they keep, you know, at least they've won silverware and they've made it to Europe, and they keep making it into Europe one way or another.
Oh, yeah, but,
I mean, Conference League is seeming the most likely for them this season, but...
Yeah, but for Barcelona, they would be, you know, even in a bad year, if they were just mildly mismatched, they would still beat Champions League at worst, so they would still have that revenue.
Yeah.
It's the year they dip out the Champions League, they're going to be in the shit.
Yeah, they are. They are. They absolutely are. By the way, just apropos of nothing, Napoli lead Juve 1-0 at
Serie A, to be honest, still a lot of good games going on there, but just
Inter's got this.
And they're playing, and don't get me wrong, they're playing like fantastic football, like attractive football to watch on top of it too, but it's just like, damn, you guys are just like, this is a landslide for you all at this point.
Yeah, Napoli didn't even come close. Napoli didn't even come close to defending their title. Boy, were we fucking wrong about Lazio this season.
Yep, and I am glad for that.
Well, yes. Well,
FC can fuck all the way off.
Well, yes, but also, yeah, boy, were we way off about Lazio from the beginning of the season.
If anything, we should have put our stocks on Bologna at this point, because holy shit.
Yeah, what? Are Bologna actually going to make Champions League?
Honestly, I kind of want them to. Just, it would be a really fun story out of that bunch.
Oh, yeah.
for sure.
Oh my god, that would be... It's between that or Ajax getting relegated, which, let me see. Oh, no, actually, they're not getting relegated.
They're safe at this point.
Well, yeah, they're in fifth.
The Jordan Henderson effect, ladies and gentlemen.
They're fifth now, so yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, Bologna's been on a run. They've won their past six and been unbeaten for seven in a row now. As of now, but they've got Inter coming up this next Saturday, so that's going to be the big test right there.
Yeah, I mean, everybody's been talking about Girona. Let's talk. I mean, nobody wants to mention Bologna at all.
It's a situation which, like, their run, it's been sneaky, but it's been really, really good the past month and a half for them, especially ever since the start of the year. The only loss that they've had since January was the Coppa Italia quarterfinal loss, and that was on penalties to Fiorentina.
So. Yeah. Yeah, I just regret that we have that there are two clubs that we do not have right now in Serie A for different reasons. Number one being Venezia, because, you know, Venezia, you know, they always have the most swag kits ever. But also Benevento, who graced us a couple seasons ago, but now they're, you know, they're down in Serie C right now. But yeah, because they had because their badge is the greatest badge ever. Chris, have you seen this badge for Benevento?
I believe I have before. I know
John has seen this because I pointed it out to him before. This is the badge that is, it's a shield. It's a red and yellow striped shield, and dead in the with a witch on a broom.
Just fantastic. It's a fantastic little bit there. It's fun. Some of the cities say, and Serie A teams like have some really fun little badges and things like that.
Oh, yeah. Delfino Pescara. I love their badge. Mm-hmm. They have a dolphin. You know, don't get me started about Nagoya again.
Yeah, of course. Of course.
I will throw on a motherfucker about that.
One thing I do find interesting, though, if we're talking Italian football and the Serie A side of the spectrum, look who's hanging around in fifth place right now.
Roma, yes, even after firing Jose Mourinho, which was an unpopular firing, I might point out.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, it's a situation which they had some rough results over the last, like, 2 months prior to his firing, but I mean, they were still alive and well in the Europa League, and I mean, they're still going on that. They've got Brighton in the round of 16 now coming up within the next couple of days. So
yeah. So hey, in the meantime, kids. Okay, so we all know that the Premier League is a three-team race at this point. Major League Soccer has kicked off.
Yes, it has.
It has. Inter Miami with the early run of results so far. It should be pointed out, though, that, yeah, I do not think that either Messi, Luis Suarez, you know, one need Luis Suarez or, you know, Sergio Busquets, they are not going to play every, there is no way in hell that they're going to play a full season.
Did you see the one Messi goal yesterday?
I did. It was madness.
That's going to be the 2024 Puskas Winter Award winner, just you watch.
I mean, okay, Suarez, 2 goals, 2 assists yesterday. Great, but also he has one knee and there's no way he plays a full season.
One knee? Are you sure about that? I'm pretty sure it's zero knees at this point. That man cannot play in anything that's artificial turf or otherwise those things will degrade in the same way Great Muda's knees did.
Oh, hey. And Muda had replacement surgery too.
Oh, yeah. That's the craziest thing for me is the fact that Luis Suarez is coming from playing on a brutal Brazilian schedule, even under those limitations and like fucking his knees up even further than to come to Miami and just, I guess he is their super sub going forward at this juncture outside of the odd game or two. But Barcelona FC is kind of getting it done 3 games into the season for them. So,
You know what? I do not think that they will be in this conversation as we get closer to October. I really don't.
It's a wait and see approach.
It is. Sure.
Isn't this the first season in like 10 or something where you haven't had a new team in the league?
It sure seems like that. You know what? I think you're right on that. I think you are correct.
Yeah, because St. Louis came in last season, but this is the first one in which they haven't added a expansion team.
Yeah, there's been no expansions.
That is going to change with San Diego coming into the fold, I believe, next season or the season after that.
Oh, yeah. Boy.
There was someone coming in.
Someone, please stop Don Garber, year 28, I think, at this point.
And I mean, if we're going to talk about MLS related, we've got to talk about the bullshit that's happened with the Open Cup and just the spinelessness of the U.S. Soccer Federation bending the knee to those fuckers in the MLS. Because as it turns out, only 8 MLS teams will be participating in this year's U.S. Open Cup.
Now that's horse shit.
It is.
It's horse shit. But you know what? Hopefully maybe we'll get a non-MLS winner too out of it. Hopefully.
That would be nice, but it's just, again, it's one of those circumstances where it's just like, you had for once you had some semblance of power here and you opted to just let the corporations win.
Yeah. Which is sad, I mean, but, you know, all these clubs are very happy to show off their Open Cup wins, like Seattle and Chicago.
Yeah, and just the nonsense to me specifically, it's the whole citing the schedule as an issue when you literally created a whole cup that means nothing between yourselves and Mexican teams to show off Lionel Messi for a couple more months out of the year.
Yeah, I mean, it meant something to Inter Miami. It meant, hey, we got Messi. You know, it just... So...
Who needs a trophy when you've got Messi?
Yeah. Well, they got the trophy with Messi. That is the point, you know. The meaningless trophy. So, I'm tapped out. We've been talking actually longer than I thought we would on this segment.
I was going to say, there is one major bit of news that we haven't covered.
What's that?
It's Paul Pogba being retired.
Oh, my God, yes. Oh, goodness gracious. Okay, so I don't know how we missed that because we nearly made that our main topic today, and now we haven't even addressed it. But wait, before we do that, let's bring up two more U.S. bits. Number one, have you seen who is actually doing pretty okay so far in his new job as Portland Timbers manager?
Who?
Phil Neville.
Wow.
Is
days. Let's wait until October.
At the end of the season, you mean? I mean, he just missed out on managing Messi too. Damn, he just missed out. But also, for those of you who pay attention to such things, did you know that the NWSL, our the U.S. you know major women's league, has a new TV deal? Yes, they have moved from CBS Sports and Paramount Plus. They are now on. They are now part of the Disney family of product. They are on ESPN.
Interesting. Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Which
that hopefully results in some good coverage for them.
I hope so. I mean, I didn't think that CBS Sports did a bad job by any stretch of the imagination. You know, of course, CBS does have our favorite punditry crew of all time. You know, for the Champions League,
one very good crew. Just don't tune into the Golasso Show guys in the morning because their coverage during the Asian Cup was atrocious.
Now, see, unfortunately, you know, and I have to do a kind of a quick explanation. We have not talked about either the AFCON or the Asian Cup, and part of that is because I did not get to see any of it because of
like the times in which it was running. It, for me, it was mostly catching highlights and following it on Twitter as games were happening while working on other stuff. So I wish I could have seen more matches. I know for AFCON, I saw the final, and that was a really fun final to kind of witness and see happen as well. And some of the crazy fuckery during AFCON was phenomenal to witness as well. Ton of upsets, ton of fun results. To think that a Ghana keeper making a route a unlikely mistake at the very end of a game was the domino effect for Ivory Coast eventually winning the whole tournament when they were practically out of it is nothing short of
weren't they, weren't Cote d'Ivoire the host nation?
Yes.
Yeah, well.
They were almost eliminated outright in the group stages if not for a Ghana mistake that led to a goal happening in stoppage time that eliminated them for the tournament.
No, boy. So, yeah, so congratulations to Cote d'Ivoire. Who did win the Asian Cup? It was
Qatar.
Qatar won that. Okay, well, how about that?
Japan basically fucked themselves over in the quarterfinals when Mori Yasubal and South Korea also screwed the pooch in the semis. Jordan made the final against Qatar.
They kind of screwed themselves
South Korea were the Jurgen Klinsmann coach team, and you get what you deserve by having that guy as your manager.
He was a fine manager for the U.S. men's national team. I'm just going to point out how he was a man. I'm just going to go ahead.
That's not a very, you know, considering the pool of managers, that's, you know.
But
considering who else is taking that job.
I'm just glad that Bruce Arena is no longer in any conversation whatsoever. So that's all I'm glad about. All right, Paul Pogba. What? Good golly, Miss Molly. It's senseless. It's just senseless.
It's the chaos end to a chaos career. Let's face it.
Yeah, chaos is a good word for it.
Yeah. As I was talking about, Chris, the guy has been... It's not entirely his fault, you know. Went to Man United... And Juve picked him up on a free. Man United suddenly decide they need him back.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't understand what made him function in France's midfield, what made him function in Juve's midfield. That Juve midfield he was in was spectacular. You know, Pirlo was in there as well. My God, what? You pay to see that again now. But they brought him back and they just thought, if we just plunk him in the middle of the park and let him do what he wants, we're all going to work out. And it's like the only thing I'm going to remember his career in England for is him. The only things are A, him trying to launching an emoji on the day of a Man United Liverpool game in which he didn't do very well, and then him capping off their 5-0 home loss to us by getting a red card. It's like, yeah. That didn't work out. Just that news that he was going to... What was it? That, again, I think, again, it's going to be the international stuff that he's going to be remembered for.
I mean, I remember him pretty well at Juve, too. The first run at Juve, obviously.
Yeah, two or three seasons he was there, I think.
Yeah.
Great midfield.
No, he was one of the best players in the world.
And then, United bought him and didn't know what to do with him.
Okay, so let's take his defense at face value for 1 second. We all know that dietary supplements is such a specious thing to begin with. Flintstones vitamins are dietary supplements, technically, you know?
The number of players who do not know what their club are giving them and are trusting their club is huge.
But that being said, can you think of any so-called dietary supplement that would spike testosterone levels?
I'm unaware of it, but it's not my specialist area.
So. Well, right, neither am I. But I mean, Chris knows because we watch similar TV shows. There's this company called Nugenix that has a former baseball, a Big Hurt, I can't remember his real name. He used to play he won with the White Sox and Doug Flutie advertising low. Doug Flutie.
That's a deep cut, man.
And, they're advertising, low testosterone, products for low testosterone for men. And it's like, okay, so wait a minute. We're advertising this shit on TV. That's also pretty specious to begin with. But if you're a professional footballer, you can't do this. Which is fine, but, you know, it just strikes me again, like, you know, the whole betting thing, and yet there's, you know, betting sponsors still on shirts, which I thought they were getting rid of those this season.
It's a bit nuts altogether. And when it comes to Pogba's situation too, on top of it, this is a guy that's escaped so just kind of a chaotic family situation. As it is, football was kind of his escape from that too, and even that sort of caught up with him over the years in terms of controversies back in 2022, if you remember the whole him being a victim of an extortion plot involving his brother and just, you know, dealing with depression as well too during his time with Man U in the late 2010s. So there's a lot going on there as a whole for him. And then the situation itself, I don't think it's necessarily the end, though. It seems like this is more of a temporary retirement until they can appeal this whole situation, reduce the sentencing probably from 4 years to two. And then 2026, I just wouldn't be surprised if we see him most likely either in the US for the MLS or over in Saudi or the UAE or one of those other Middle Eastern leagues that are the retirement location nowadays.
Yeah, I mean, is this 4 years set in stone? Because, I mean, of course, Everton just got 4 points back of their 10, and I believe that there's another hearing to come too there. So that deficit may be cut further, but I mean, this isn't...
It's on the second possible punishment, isn't it, I think, for Everton?
Maybe. I'm not sure, to be honest. But, you know, because that whole situation is confusing in itself. I mean, are we sure that 4 years is set in stone here for Pogba?
Yeah, exactly. You mentioned, like, I don't know for sure on that regard. So, it's a situation in which we'll keep our eyes on over the next couple of months or years, however long it takes. But in the meantime, there's just one question that we have to ask ourselves as this all unfolds.
Go on.
Where was Paul Pogba in all of this?
We're on here for resurrecting this meme.
Well, you know, I am going to call out one thing about the coverage of the Pogba situation is that everybody keeps bringing up, like, I've seen more than a few times about, you know, infamous bans for failed drug tests, and they keep bringing up Rio Ferdinand. No, that was not what he was banned for. He was banned for failing to take a drug test, not that he failed a drug test.
He did not turn up on time for a drug test.
Yeah, and the next day he did take the test the next day and he passed, but, you know, he did not show up at his scheduled time, and that's what happened. And that was eight months.
It's huge deals there altogether. We'll keep our eyes and ears open as this situation unfolds with Pogba. Overall, I think outside of everything we talked about, a couple of leagues have started. Obviously, MLS is one. The Brazilian state championships are unfolding right now. They're getting closer to wrapping up over the next couple of weeks here before jumping into the actual Campeonato Brasileiro, which, you know, that's when the real competition kind of is going to kick off there. The J League also has had its second week completed at this point, in which no team in the entire league, surprisingly, has 6 points throughout the first 2 weeks.
I have been noticing you are wearing a J-League shirt today, Chris. What are we sporting today? Vissel Kobe.
The Vissel Kobe kit that I have.
Oh, okay. Vissel Kobe.
They won the title last year, which was really neat, but, I mean, they took a loss to Kashiwa Reysol, this past week. And so, you know, the competition has been tough. All of the Tokyo teams have earned points at this juncture too, with Machida Zelvia being in fourth place right now.
Wow.
With getting their first win this weekend against Nagoya Grampus, actually.
In that regard.
Tokyo Verde got their first point against Urawa Red Diamonds.
Until I get my Orca back, Nagoya are dead to me. Until I get my Orca back.
I
want my Orca!
I get it. And then FC Tokyo drew against Sunfrecce Hiroshima this past week as well, but they won last week. Again, the interesting part, this is the first time in J-League's history in which all three major Tokyo teams are in the J1 at the same time. So those derbies, when they come up, are going to be huge.
No.
I cannot wait to see the photos and the atmosphere that those are going to be bringing. So.
Well, I think this has been the longest news segment we've ever done. Not the longest episode or longest main topic. No, this is the longest news segment we've ever done. Because holy...
With that said, I think it's as good of a time to move on.
What was that, John?
The main topic's 5 minutes, right?
Yeah, pretty much. So yeah, the stupid rules about added time now, the halves just keep getting longer and longer now. So coming up, today's topic: what makes a great striker? John, Chris, and Jeffrey dissect the most prominent position on the pitch. Please stay tuned.
Listening to the second half of episode 91 of the Busting Balls podcast. Tonight, John, Chris, and Jeffrey talk about what makes a great striker.
Now this topic started, as sometimes things often do on this show, this topic started off because my son was talking some bullshit about Didier Drogba.
You're calling your own son out on the podcast.
I am, and I'm still calling out his cowardice because he never wants to come on here to defend his positions.
At some point or another, Leon is going to have to stand on business, as the kids say these days.
Yes, he will. He will. I agree. Yes, he is. Liam. Yeah, Liam. I don't know if you're ever going to listen to this, but your ass needs to be on this podcast at some point, because you have some positions that you need to defend on this here podcast that you, because you like to tell
the right to what was it? There is a right of reply here.
Well, we give it to him and he refuses to take us up on it. So I'm calling my own son a coward for this. Well, anyway, in this particular instance, he was talking some shit about Didier Drogba. Because it's time from a joke we were making that Jose Mourinho is going to be the next Celtic manager, and he's going to turn Kyogo into, he couldn't think of a name, and I said Drogba, because, who else do you associate with the Mourinho era at Chelsea as a striker than Didier Drogba?
Andrei Shevchenko.
And I said Drogba, and then he goes, was he actually that good? And then he looks up his goal percentage. And it's like, oh my goodness, is this how it's going to be? So we actually had a big discussion about this, about what makes a good striker. And I just want to publicly have this discussion too, because I think that the idea that if you're a striker, you should be scoring every single match unquestioned is horseshit, and nobody outside of nerds like us actually believe this.
I tell you, if you want the word on Drogba, I would recommend anyone track down the tape of the game at Anfield. Chelsea coming to Anfield after the ghost goal. They came there in the autumn. Drogba did not score, but that was one of the finest striking performances I've ever seen. He destroyed us. He destroyed Carragher and Hoopier. 4 assists.
Wow.
He was unplayable.
Well, see, okay, so there you go. So does a striker need to score every single time?
No. In the modern game, you need to offer your team a lot more. You know, there are very few teams who can accommodate, say, Erling Haaland, who offers pretty much nothing outside of scoring goals.
Well, that's why I'm wondering. I mean, is this what the modern standard is now, is that we have to judge everybody? Like, assuming Erling Haaland is 1.00 on the scale.
Yeah.
Is this how we're judging going forward? I don't think that's a good rubric, personally.
No, but then again, it's been distorted by the fact that, you know, the biggest name on forward has been Ronaldo. And Ronaldo, again, is exactly the kind of thing that Haaland is. He is...
We're saying Cristiano Ronaldo.
Yeah, Cristiano Ronaldo.
Okay.
Please, let's make the differentials here, because otherwise I'm going to blow a fucking gasket.
Let's put it... Ronaldo Minor.
Let's call it that. Just call him Cristiano Ronaldo's fine.
Yeah, just call him Cristiano Ronaldo, yeah. Yeah, John, you do forget we do have a Brasileiro on our show now.
Yeah, quite right. But any chance to call Ronaldo the second best Ronaldo, you know I'm going to take it here. these guys, who are great goal scorers, but you need to build a team around them. And if you build a team around them and they miss games, you are in trouble.
Okay, yeah, right. But also, I think that there's others. I mean, I think there's other rubrics we need to be looking at, too. Not just, you know, putting the ball in the onion bag.
This is, and it's like, for all the Klopp will, you know, if they ask, would you take Erling Brett Haaland? He'd go, yeah, I'd take him. He would not fit a Klopp side, for instance. A Klopp forward needs to be working their arse off, you know, kick off till whenever they're subbed off to final whistle.
Right.
You need to be pressuring the defense. You need to be working without the ball. A modern striker needs a much higher work rate than, say, they might have got away with 20, 30 years ago.
Well, yeah, understandably. If he was playing now, I don't know if Thierry Henry would have had all the goals that he did.
I think he would have done, but let's remember that Thierry Henry didn't become Thierry Henry until what? He was what, 24, 26, somewhere mid-20s?
Yeah.
Because, you know, he came to England. He was a standing joke for about half a season because he didn't score for, what was it, 14 games?
Something like that. Right, right. But also, he was a winger, too. He wasn't a striker at first. And then Wenger changed all that.
Do you
remember that if Wenger had waited one more day, yeah, Henry would have been sent on loan to Parma instead.
Wow, there's a what if in history for.
I'm telling you what, yeah, I might not be an Arsenal fan if that was the case.
Thierry Henry, I didn't rate him until my friend who had an Arsenal season ticket does not anymore. Sorry, Jeff.
Damn it.
He gave me tickets to... He couldn't make it. He said, you know, you're up in London that weekend. Do you want the tickets to go and see Arsenal against Chelsea? Oh, yeah, fair enough. Henry, I thought, yeah, he's fine.
This is a Highbury, I'm guessing.
Yeah. It was at the library. I watched him absolutely destroy Marcel Desailly that day. 2 goals... Marcel Desailly was left on his backside for both of them.
Wow.
At that point, I'm going, okay, you know, I might be looking fun. This is a new favorite player here. He had style.
Oh, yeah. But, I mean, you know, again, but, I mean, it's always a striker that's going to get you into the game, too. Well, okay, I should say always. There are exceptions. But, I mean, I can tell you, in my personal fandom journey, which, John, you are aware of.
Yes.
You know, what led me to becoming an Arsenal fan was seeing Thierry Henry, on the TV, doing what he was doing.
Okay.
And then, how did I become a fan of Celtic? It wasn't for any religious reasons, I'll tell you that much. It was because I fell in love with one Henrik Larsson.
Yeah, but the interesting one is, it's what strikers were done for. Strikers, particularly in British football, they were battering rams to a degree. The big strikers. You had the guy who could head the ball. You had, say, just to go into the 90s, Alan Shearer. You had Les Ferdinand. Stoke Celtic. John Hartson.
Yeah, I was just about to mention Hartson as being as a battering ram type striker. Yes.
Again, I remember when Celtic won at Anfield in 2003. Hartson was fabulous. Again, unplayable. But for a top side in the modern game, not enough mobility, not enough work rate. It's changed. Drogba was that Hartson type. But with added mobility.
I mean, Drogba was quick. He was quick. He had the pace.
It was Houllier's last season. The season before he went to Chelsea, Houllier was he was so nonplussed by how to play Drogba. He went into, I think it was the TV room to get footage, and he had a rant at them in there for no good reason.
Mm.
To me, Drogba would be pretty much your ideal modern striker because he, not only is he strong, not only is he quick, had exactly what you need to strike. And I think he only had one really big goal-scoring season. But he made that team function.
Right. Well, okay, so Chris, we've hardly heard from you on this. So, I mean, what are your similar thoughts about the modern striker position, and should Erling Haaland be the rubric that we're judging all strikers by at this point?
I think in terms of it, you can't really use Erling Haaland as the rubric because he is, in my honest opinion, a legitimate freak of nature. Like, cyborgish. Like, we make the jokes about him being a cyborg and whatnot, but strikers of that size, that strength, with that pace, don't come often. They're usually a once-in-a-generation type of guys as a whole. And to kind of John's initial point, like, I do think you could slot Haaland in to pretty much any coaching system that you can. It's just you're going to get different things out of him depending on how you play him in that perspective. I think with what it's been done with him over at Dortmund and then now with Pep over at Manchester City is that they basically slotted him into a system where he's expected to do two or three very specific things and to reap the benefits out of it. And with Manchester City's entire system, it's a situation in which he's going to have the kind of season that he did last year, maybe not a 36 goal season this year around unless he picks up the pace immensely due to dealing with some nagging injuries.
Well, he's still the top goal scorer in the Premier League.
Yeah, he has 18 goals and five, and that's the thing, he has five assists to go with that too, so it's not like he is just a goals-only type of guy too. He can pitch in with the odd assist or two. It's just, when it comes to other strikers, it's a combination of both them having sort of the mental capacity to handle the responsibility of being sort of the main act of a team, even if they specifically don't desire the role per se, and then having the physical aspects to go with the mentals as well, having that good first touch, having the pace and the acceleration to go with it, being able to contribute to whatever system your team is playing. Kind of another example that comes to mind immediately as well is Gabriel Jesus over on Arsenal's end of the spectrum. Yeah, he's not going to be your 15-plus goal scorer every single season, but what he brings to that role into Arteta's system, Eddie Nketiah can't duplicate that. They haven't had anybody else in that team that's been able to duplicate that as of currently within that system, what Gabriel Jesus does bring to that team, even if yes. he's not the main scorer on that team.
I mean, that much is true. I mean, and we're still noticing that, you know, in Jesus' absence, but, you know, we've also had others that have, you know, picked up their shit too. Yes. You know, in a large way. But anyway, we don't want to get into that. I was going to say, though, you know, if we're going to come up with, you know, old-timey Premier League comparisons for Erling Haaland, Drogba would not be the comparison point.
No.
Who else can you think of that was notorious for only scoring when they were within the in the 6 yard box?
I can think of plenty. Gary Lineker was the guy in.
Okay. Oh, that. Okay. That's a good one. I was thinking Ruud van Nistelrooy.
Yeah.
Yes.
Absolutely. That's a good shout there.
And again, it's very notable that Man United's leanest period in under Ferguson was when they had van Nistelrooy. They had that one title, which we won't go into for Jeff's mental health here. But apart from, they had like 3 or 4 years. That was the one title was all they won, essentially. A cup, maybe a couple of cups in there. Because they were easy to stop. Because you just stopped the ball getting to Van Nistelrooy.
Right. But yet, he still scored a lot.
Yeah.
But they were all in the six-yard box.
But the thing with that is that it's not necessarily the number of goals they score. It's the number of goals that you wouldn't have necessarily got if they hadn't been in the team.
Okay. It's
the team goals. So say, again, when Man United bought the ghost of Ronaldo back for that last spell, it wasn't they didn't score. You know, they scored roughly the same amount of goals. But it just went all through Ronaldo. He added nothing to the side. A good striker. And I think Erling Haaland...
Oh, he had an entertainment value to those of us who are Man U fans, but...
Oh, absolutely. It was funny as hell. But Erling Haaland does add to Pep's side. He's changed the style of Pep's side. They are slightly more direct these days. They're built around that. But, you know... It's almost unfair because what's great about Haaland is it's that quick, that burst in the box, the little movement he does in the box, the way he loses defenders. And that, to me, a good striker finds that space. It's like, say you take Darwin Nunez yesterday when Alex McAllister played that ball into the box. He made that run. He knew where the...
In that 100th minute goal, yeah.
Anticipation.
No, I agree with John on that point. To me, specifically, when it comes to Darwin Nunez, for a while, I kept thinking to myself sort of who I could compare him to in terms of, like, previous records and whatnot. And suddenly it kind of clicked for me. I'm like, Edinson Cavani is pretty much a very close comparison that you can make in terms of a guy that is able to... has the physicals to go with it, of course, for pace, acceleration and all that, but who was able to run the channels and kind of able to lift his side by just being able to make the movements that he needs to do with or without the ball. And off the ball movement for a striker is about as important as you can get, as much of an importance as you can get when you're dribbling.
What was the old statement about Wayne Gretzky? Is that he knew where the puck was going to be, not where it was?
Yeah. Absolutely.
So yeah.
Yeah, and the other thing is, as a great striker, even if you're not going to get the ball yourself, you open up that space for someone who's gone. You pull that defender away from where they should do. Again, you make that team function.
So you
open the space for others.
Okay, so here's what I came up with. Here's what I came up with about what makes a great striker outside of, you know, obviously putting the ball in the back of the net, because nobody is going to score in every game. No, nobody, not even Jamie Vardy on his vaunted run scored in every single game. Okay, so. So here's my thoughts. Okay, yes, obviously, goal ability to score goals. Yes, I also think assist contributions. have to be a part of that. There also has to be some other intangibles, like what else do you bring to this team? What else do you do? Chris brought up Gabriel Jesus. He doesn't always score, obviously, but you could tell when he's on what he's contributing to the side. Like, is he getting the ball into a position, even if he's not the primary assist in a goal? Does he get them into a position to do so?
Yeah, Bobby Firmino. I talked to the report writer Musiro Kwanga on Twitter on this, and the description was a one man wolf pack. Firmino was a pressing monster. Yeah.
Firmino to me is probably one of the greatest false nines we'll ever see in the game in recent memory. Just the way that he opened up the wings for Mane and Salah in that 4-3-3 that Liverpool kind of won a bunch of titles with. Like, that's your proof in and of itself right there.
Right. Bobby Firmino is a good example of that, even though, you know, we won't discuss why my issues with Bobby Firmino. But okay, so I think that, you know, what other positive non-tangible contributions do you add to the squad? But also, I think there's another factor we have to add into this. And that is because in us being on the fan side of things, on the supporter side of things, we're just viewing the football. What entertainment value does a striker bring? Because let's face it, that's kind of why we watch it, is for entertainment value. Yes, we get involved, we get invested, we want the team to win, but at the end of the day, were we entertained by the match? And I think that has to be a lot to do with it as well.
What you're saying is you want a really good shit house here.
No, I don't necessarily want a really good shit. Well, okay, maybe
Luis
I do.
Luis Suarez, peak Luis Suarez is what you're talking about.
He certainly was not boring, I'll tell you that much. I don't know if entertaining was the right word, but he was not boring, to say the least.
He was entertaining, taking out the obvious bits. When he was on form, my God, that one season he had with Liverpool, where what a play. He could score from anywhere. It was the buzz when he got the ball. Was you just thought, is it okay? It's not, is this going in the net? It's how is it going in the net? And it was wonderful to watch.
I mean, when Suarez was on, he was on. I guess he still is at Inter Miami at the moment, at least. But we'll see. We'll see if the chewing gum and duct tape holds. Yes.
I'll say this about Luis Suarez: for as much disdain as I have for him as a human being, there's a reason why the letters MSN, when you mention them among football fans, you're not thinking of a Microsoft Messenger, but pretty very specific man and what they brought to the table.
Yeah, and again, the weakness, I think it'd be interesting to get Chris' point, is why was Neymar kind of the weakest of those three, really?
Probably because he wasn't the direct goal scorer of the bunch. That was Suarez's job. That was, to an extent, Messi's job, depending on how they ran into those channels. It's, again, the situation with strikers, there's all of those factors that you mentioned, Jeff, but then also I think one thing that should be counted, especially in today's game, more specifically than before, it's where exactly are they playing? What type of formation are their managers playing? Is it a very structured, rigorous system where everybody has their role and their expectation is to turn in a perfect 10 performance in that role? Or is it something that's a little more free-flowing, where you have more of a freedom to play, to add a little more of your own pizzazz and creativity to the aspects of the role? It is very much dependent on system compared to years back, where it's like, oh, you're a striker, yeet the ball into the goal as hard as you humanly fucking
can. Right. I mean, let's take a good example about the systems too, because, I mean, one that's come up several times by me, and he's still scoring goals, but he's not as prolific as he was in previous seasons, Kyogo Furuhashi at Celtic. You know, you took him out of Ange Postecoglou's system, and he's dried up somewhat.
Yeah.
And then you consider the other side of that coin. Ange Postecoglou comes into Tottenham, and Richarlison suddenly is scoring 9 to 10 goals a season.
Which we've never seen from him before, let's face it.
No. He was probably one of the biggest frauds in football until recently. And he may still be, I don't know. But, you know, Chris is getting a little steamed by this accusation of one of his countrymen being a fraud, but, you know.
No, not really. I just think it's a situation for me for going to the quick Tottenham bit where his role is as a true number 9 center forward, which Harry Kane occupied for the longest time. And now that Kane's gone, somebody had to step in for that. And we're seeing results with it.
Right. That's what it is. And then let's take this further. And now Kane has replaced, you know, the consummate striker for Bayern and Robert Lewandowski. And Lewandowski, he too is scoring, but he's nowhere near as prolific as he was at Barca than he was at Bayern.
Or at Dortmund, indeed, you know. Again, made that guy a striker, made him on the technique front. The complicated thing is the modern striker, because you've got so many different systems, it's almost specialist these days. You know, Mo Salah's a wide forward. He's not a striker by any means, but he scores the goals. He's changed his game. It, you know, the Mo Salah of 4 or 5 years ago, where he would just burn players with pace, he's not going to do that anymore because he's a step or two slower. You know, he's still, by any reasonable stretch of imagination, fast. But he now fits the system. It's kind of, he's more willing to pass it off, to lay it off, rather than just go directly for goal, because he cannot hit that ball as hard as he used to. And it's interesting to me, for a great striker, what's the longevity? Are we talking about just someone who has 3 or 4 years? Are we talking someone who has that over, you know, say, again, going back to Teddy Sheringham back when he was, you know,
I was just about to mention him.
Yeah. But then again,
he was 40 scoring at Portsmouth.
Yeah. But then again, you can then say Ronaldo, the good Ronaldo, let's put it that way. He got cut down by injuries, but he was still astonishing. That the physique, the power, the anticipation. You know, that,
if not the haircut.
That was part of it as well too. I think, to a certain extent, I think if you want a striker, if your definition of a striker is someone that is memorable, both on and off the pitch, I do think certain looks have a means to do with that, especially in today's generation where it's a more sort of driven by the entertainment aspect of it. Newer kids kind of coming into the fold, they play FIFA, EAFC and whatnot, and they have obviously a lot of players with certain celebrations, certain haircuts, certain looks and things of that nature, which, again, even though he wasn't exactly a striker, David Beckham really was light years ahead on a ton of this stuff there, as it is in terms of present yourself in a way that is sort of like makes you iconic, maybe raises your profile up a little bit more than what your playtime would.
So let me ask this in the last couple of minutes we have here. What do we consider the difference between a striker and a forward? Or is there a difference? Because John, you made the distinction about Salah. He's not a striker. He's a wide forward. Okay, yeah. What's the difference between a striker and a forward then?
I would say a striker is purely down the middle. It's a guy down the middle. You know, say the guy, if you're in trouble, you punch it up to him, he holds it up, or he finds a way to keep possession down that middle. The wide forward doesn't have that kind of responsibility of holding the ball up or staying up there. I would say it's a distinction. A forward player, you know, isn't necessarily going to be physical if they're a wide forward.
Hmm. Chris?
I'd say for me in particular, it's very much based on, because to me, just growing up and everything else, it's very much based on that's the guy that's up front, the most up front out of everybody involved. Anyone that's behind him is either an attacking midfielder or just a playing midfielder outright. I think just by letter of the law. And again, with the modern game, these roles have evolved. Obviously, wingers and attacking midfielders can get involved into the scoring game and be forwards and what have you with them. But I think the in terms of a purist definition of a striker, it's the guy that's furthest ahead and who has the kind of expectation to be sort of the main man of the bunch, whether that is as a goal scorer or the guy with that aura of a goal scorer. Pretty much that. So
yeah. Obviously,
it's interesting in the modern game more so than anything.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I mean, obviously, this is an open-ended topic, and when we're considering, you know, like some of the biggest players are actually wingers, like, you know, Jude Bellingham, you know, and we were considering him the transfer of the season for all the goals he scored, but he's also a winger. He's not a striker, per se, or even a forward, let's be honest, yeah. You know.
It's about getting them in the most effective position to do the job.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I totally agree with that, so. If you have any thoughts on this topic, we'd love to hear from you. You can hit us up at BustingBallsPod on Twitter or email us, BustingBallsPod@gmail.com. You have been listening to episode 91 of the Busting Balls podcast on our native SoundCloud feed, SoundCloud.com/Busting-Balls, or the PWOM podcast network, SoundCloud.com/Pro Wrestling Only, or you can listen to us on Spotify, search Busting Balls podcast. We did kind of take longer than we thought we were going to get you this episode. You know, just assume that, yeah, at some point, yeah, we're going to get delayed because, you know, we are all busy people in our various things. I mean, Chris is doing a lot of YouTube content creation. I, of course, am a lot busier than I used to be on the comics writing end of things. And John is, you know,
bumming around.
John's just, you know, kind of there in Wales, so, you know, waiting patiently for us to get back to this thing that we've been doing for years. We love it. We love you, John. You're the other OG of this podcast, so, you know. So, any last words from either of you two?
Bring on City.
I guess if you all want a somewhat interesting case study on like an extreme version of what a striker should look like, either read or watch Blue Lock. That's been
I tried that. I couldn't get into it. I was like, this is wacky shit.
I think a lot of it is that people tend to approach it as a regular soccer manga/anime that's gonna have all the regular teamwork and rules with it, and not treating it as a shonen battle royale just without all the actual depth and stuff within it, using the sport of football as the parameter.
Well, I'll go back and give it another chance, because
it's a little different in that aspect. I do think the animation for it did do a little more justice with soundtracks and everything else compared to the reading experience.
I think we should. Yeah,
it's intriguing.
Maybe that'll be a topic coming up one time. The best soccer comic/manga. I think there's going to be a lot more manga involved. But yeah. And no, this is not an excuse for me to big up my self-published project of the 2010s. So this is not an excuse for that. Yes, that one, John. Yes.
I'll do the big enough for you if you want.
that's our jobs basically at that point.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
We're the hype man, baby. Give us the
money. Yeah. That's right. Yeah, I need y'all my hype, man. Alrighty, so well, I guess that's that for this episode. So until then, it's good night from me.
And it's good night from there.
All right. We'll see you hopefully in a couple of weeks.